education. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
Us that it is 5 p.m. Thursday and time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. We are aired only on Houston's community station, KPFT. I am Mary Edgerton, tonight's host, and along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on journeys through the windows of their souls, on fanciful trips amid worlds of enchantment before returning us safely to the present. My guests tonight are Don and Amy Figg, both classic vocalists who many of you in the Houston area and beyond, as we will hear, have heard while attending the Houston Grand Opera. Opera is a fascinating storytelling genre, replete with drama, fantastical scenes, out of this world personalities with costumes to match, and spellbinding music. I myself am a recent fan and saw both Don and Amy perform in the Houston recent production of Carmen. It was indeed a marvelous evening. Don and Amy, I know that you've been choristers for over 20 years. How does one fall into a career as a vocalist? So Don, why don't you go first?
Well, first, when I was around 18, I started out as a rock singer. And then I started reading about the great Caruso, the great Italian tenor. And since I speak Spanish and I speak Portuguese and I can speak a little Italian, I was like, you know, I might need to change genres and have a voice that will last longer and not fade away through, you know, abuse and terror, you know what I mean?
Yes, right.
So I started taking lessons, and I found out there was an opera in Houston, and there was a professional chorus that they hired singers to be part of. So, you know, my singing teacher says, yeah, go ahead and audition. And that was back in 1994. And I went and auditioned. You have to have two arias, and you sing, and if he likes you, he will give you a contract. That's how it works. So you, what you have to do is when you're admitted into the opera, you have 3 years with the opera, and every third year you have to re-audition or you do not get contracted. He wants to see how your voice is doing. He wants to hear your solo voice. And one of the big things he's looking for is color, something that blends in the chorus, and making sure that you don't have a wobble or a tremolo. A tremolo is a fast vibrato, and either of those do not work in choruses.
So let's go back a moment. Can you actually like hum a few tunes of what those are? I mean, just hum a few bars, not tunes. Hum a few bars so that we'll know what you mean.
Oh, a wobble? Well, usually it's the basses that have the wobbles. Oh, 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 oh.
Okay.
And a tremolo, I don't know, maybe Amy can do a tremolo.
It's a really fast vibrato. It's something that doesn't blend well.
And it sticks out like a...
Okay. Okay. Well, keep going. Keep going. Just wanted a little context there.
Well, so I've been in the opera since 1994. And so next spring will be 28 years. And that is just something that I look back at and go, wow, I cannot believe it. So this, when we were doing Carmen, every time I'd walk up to the Wortham Center, where Houston Grand Opera is, I would just kind of shake my head and smile and say, wow, going on 28 years. And then Amy, when did you start, Amy?
So first, I just want to thank you for this opportunity, Mary. It's an honor to be asked. So I want to start with that. So I have always been a lover of music and of especially of opera. I had some very influential teachers in high school who would always have opera playing in the classroom. And I just started to listen to it and study it and fell in love with the drama and the technique. And Renee Fleming once said that opera is the highest level of singing. And I started to practice and to learn about it. And I've discovered that it really was a home for my voice. And I started winning competitions in high school and had some excellent voice teachers. And actually received a voice scholarship to Harding University, where I graduated with a music degree. And as soon as I graduated from college, I auditioned for the Houston Grand Opera and became one of their sopranos. So the sopranos and the tenors are the most competitive sections. So to be chosen and to have been a part of the Houston Grand Opera for over 21 years has truly been a gift and a blessing. So you have to go in with two contrasting arias in style, technique, and in language, preferably. And really, and then he'll give you one contract to test you out. And if he likes you, if your sound blends well, if you learn well, you memorize well, and believe me, he's watching. All of the rehearsals are in a circle. Everyone sits in a circle and he sits in the center and he can peg you out. And so it's very much a professional organization. We all get paid very well. And we have to maintain that position within the opera. And every 3 years, we have to go and reclaim that spot. So this last year, Don and I both are on the same year of our re-audition schedule. So the nerves are flying, you know, as we prepare for the upcoming Beto audition. Now we both nailed it. So we both received all of the contracts for this season. So it's truly an honor to be a part of this amazing company and to do it together. It's as a married couple has been extraordinary, truly. So
that is quite a journey. And I presume that you have to have a different aria every 3 years.
I have repeated an aria twice. But yes, I've challenged myself because I want to show him I am learning. I'm always growing. I'm learning new things. And I enjoy learning new arias. So it challenges me to stay on my game too. So yeah, I have repeated a couple of times, but for the most part, I have learned a new aria each time. And each time you audition, it's one aria. So the first time you do two.
Oh, okay. That helps.
Yeah.
And this is interesting to me. You started with a formal education in music.
Yes.
Don, you fell into it when you fell out of your rock career.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I lived in California. I knew a lot of really talented musicians. I'm talking prodigies. And they were garage band musicians. And I just, something inside me says, you are a singer. And I went to junior college and I went to a class voice class. This is get a confirmation. And the teacher says, if I were you, I would study voice. And that was my confirmation. Yes.
And it was one of the first things I loved about him was his voice. I always wanted to marry a tenor. And at the time when we met, he was a tenor.
Because, now I'm a baritone.
Because tenors, tenors and sopranos have all of the duets. So we got to sing together. We've been able to sing throughout our entire marriage, and we've done so many wonderful things in the opera and outside of the opera together as singers. So that's been a joy for us.
I've heard you both sing in the opera. I saw Carmen, or yes. I almost have to say experienced Carmen, the recent production, because I found it mesmerizing. And my whole evening was wonderful with someone who was an opera fan who told us the story of Carmen and then discussed the treatment of Carmen from a more of a independent woman's point of view of making her own way, as opposed to the previous versions that treated Carmen as the evil woman who brought down everyone. And it was, and then of course there's everything about it, the costumes. The costumes are wonderful.
Yes.
I love costumes.
And they actually had dancers in this production.
Yeah. This was my fourth time to do Carmen.
Really?
Yes.
And my third.
And I, as a young piano student, had to learn some of the pieces of Carmen. Probably we all did. It's probably in part three of that. I have to say, I actually lived in New York for a couple of years, and I went to the Met, but I didn't realize there were so many different models for how you maintain a company, re-auditioning versus being a lifelong member. It's like the tenure model. I'm in academia. The tenure model in academia, you get tenure and you're there for life, or you get something called renewable tenure, where you have to come back and say, I'm still active. So does that make the Houston Grand Opera unique?
Yes, because at the Met, they are salaried and they're tenured. And the voice is getting older. That's when the wobbles come in. And our chorus master said, the Met, there's so many older voices that really should retire, but they're still there because they're tenured. At Houston Grand Opera, it's contract work. And you audition every 3 years. And some people audition, they don't get contracted back because the chorus master, Richard Beto, Maestro Beto, amazing talent.
Gifted musician.
Just an amazing musician. He will hear something in the voice and say, can't use it, sorry.
Yeah.
And that's.
So you make your selections for what shows you would like to have for that season. And then based on your audition, he will send you contracts. So we typically do 3 to 4 contracts a season.
That's pretty busy.
That's big. That's a lot of work.
How long is a rehearsal?
Depends on the show. Some shows have more chorus in them, like Carmen is a big chorus show. Other shows not as much, and certainly an opera that is in Russian is going to require more music rehearsals for memorization than something that maybe is in English or has a smaller chorus role. So they're all different. Some we even take to the Miller Outdoor Theater and to the Woodlands Pavilion. So there's additional chorus rehearsals for those too. So each contract is different, and you receive a calendar with the schedule. And you don't want to have any conflicts. Possible.
Well, what
you know, but you just treat it like any other job. You need to make the rehearsals and get approval to miss any rehearsals or stagings.
But nevertheless, opera is difficult.
Yeah,
I haven't been in any opera where I've said, "Oh, this is a piece of cake."
Mm-mm.
It's all difficult.
It really is brain work. I mean, that's something I enjoy too, is that I am learning something that is challenging. And when you have mastered it and you've memorized it and you're performing it with perfection, there's satisfaction in that when you're on stage and you're all performing something beautifully together. It's very rewarding. I mean, there's nothing like stepping out on that stage opening night. I mean, after weeks of rehearsal and texts, costume fittings, it all comes together. That is what we have missed for the past 18 months.
Oh.
Age. So it's not just the audience that has missed us, but we have missed them.
Right.
And to be back and to be on stage when some of us thought, are we ever going to be able to return again? It really is a blessing. It makes you appreciate it. And we do not take it for granted. So HGO has always been and will always be one of the greatest blessings in our lives. So we treasure it.
So I have to ask you then, with all that you've said, which has been a rich fabric of a story of getting into the opera and being in the opera, what was your most memorable opera experience?
Well, we have many, many. But I must say, one of the most engaging and interesting
extraordinary
productions we were in was The Passenger. And it was composed by a Polish composer. I'm going to butcher his name, Mieczysław Weinberg. He composed it in 1968. And it's based on the novel written by a Polish Holocaust survivor, Sofia Pozmisz. And The Passenger, it takes place in the 1960s, and the character Lisa and her husband are traveling on a ship to Brazil. And her husband is a West German diplomat that is beginning his new job post in Brazil. And on the ship, Lisa is struck by a lady with a veil that looked a lot like an inmate at Auschwitz concentration camp. And her name was Martha. But unbeknownst to Lisa's husband, she was an SS guard at Auschwitz, and her husband never knew about it. So this opera is a Holocaust opera that deals with the Holocaust in the aftermath. And this production was premiered in Houston in the United States, but then we took it to the Lincoln Center Festival in New York City. And that was at the Park Avenue Armory, which was an amazing building itself. It was an armory for weaponry during the Civil War. And the building was old and it had all these old rooms and it was just really cool. And it was performed there July 10th and 13th of the year 2014, three performances. And it was with the Lincoln Center Festival. So we got to take this show to New York City and we were there for a week and we got to spend the days, you know, sightseeing around the city. And then our nights were performing and rehearsing The Passenger. So let me go back to The Passenger real quick. The production is performed with two levels. The upper level is actually the ship on the journey to Brazil in the 1960s. And the lower level is the actual concentration camp, barracks, with train tracks that end at the barracks. So there's two levels. One, the ship, and the bottom, this dark concentration camp. So what's interesting is that Lisa, the SS guard that is trying to have a new life in Brazil with her husband, her psychological distress comes up again when she sees this woman that looks just like one of the inmates that she used to torment at Auschwitz. So she's going through this torment and this distress throughout the whole opera. And then it changes scenes. There's the scene on top, what's going on the ship, and the drama that happens on the ship. And then it changes to go back in time with the Auschwitz. And it's really dark and it's sad and it's brutal. So it goes back and forth. And what the opera never discloses, if that veiled woman was truly Martha from Auschwitz. But it does focus on her trying to leave that life behind and try to have a new life in South America. So it was really neat. So it was neat because it was a serious subject about the Holocaust. And we took it to New York. And that was really a neat experience, because to actually, you know, go to New York and perform in an opera is a blessing in itself.
And for the Houston Grand Opera to be asked to do it.
I have to say, I got chills while you were telling me about it.
And, okay. Just one thing I want to interject. So it's very important as a visual to imagine this ship, because the top of the ship was all in white. Present day was white. The costumes were white. The ship was white. Everything was white. When she went into the past to Auschwitz, everything was dark and gloomy below the ship. That was Auschwitz. That was death. So the visual, this set was all encompassing, and the lights would shine on present day white, and then it would go dark into Auschwitz when she went to the past. So it really was an amazing production, and to do it in Houston first, then we got to travel. We got paid to travel. We had all day to have fun. And then we got paid to sing every night. And I got to do that with Dawn and my friends. I mean, it was just like score. It was great.
Well, I have to say, I love storytelling, verbal storytelling, oral storytelling, I should say. But I also love the illustration of the story. And like you say, using the dark and the light to contrast between her present and her past. And I guess, Dawn, you said her husband never knew that she was with ENS. So this is it's a dark secret. And I had chills while y'all were telling me about it. Mm-hmm. And I was living here at that time. I wish I had gone to see it. I would have had I been awakened to being an opera fan. But that sounds like, that's an amazing story. And that's not the story, you know, we think of opera and we think of Carmen, the Roma and the problems with the Roma, or we think of, some of Mozart's, you know, the rape and then coming out of it. And I'm not going to know the titles. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about some of the themes. The woman with tuberculosis who died.
La Traviata.
La Traviata.
Yes. And these all seem fixed in a time when people wrote opera, you know, in the 17th to 19th century. And you wonder, can there really be a new opera? But this has all that same drama and intrigue and searching of your soul and so on.
There was one line in a piece of the music from The Passenger where one of the prisoners in the camp, she sings and she says, never let them forget. So the story has to be told. In storytelling, that guarantees we will always remember. And those stories are passed down from generation to generation. And this story, having it revived, guaranteed that the Jews will continue to be honored and remembered for their sacrifice. And it gives them validity. And it validates what they went through. Like, we see, we hear you, and we're sorry.
Yes.
And telling those stories gives them validation that they are no longer in the shadows. We are bringing it out into the light. And that opera did that for many, many Jews. And that was powerful for us to be a part of that story.
Definitely.
Fantastic. Now I have to figure out, can I find it on YouTube? But it would never have the sound.
You could. I can send you some great pictures.
We got to talk about the costumes.
Yeah, we got to talk. I got to tell you about the costumes. The costumes, Mary. So Houston Grand Opera spared no expense, okay? We actually had costumes. I wore a costume. I was an SS officer, okay? I wore an SS officer uniform that was made from the same patterns and in the same factory, the Hugo Boss factory, where the original costumes were made. It was eerie. Every time I put that thing on, it was like, and you know, they told me, they said, Amy, you don't look like a prisoner. You are definitely SS officer material with your blue eyes and blonde hair. So they said no makeup. And I mean, I was plain, and it was scary. I mean, when I look at myself in the mirror, I went, yeah, this is a real deal. And so there was authenticity in everything that the opera did and represented for that show, down to the fine, minutest detail. So the costumes were an original and the real deal. So I think that's very important to point out. So HGO does not cut corners, and which made it even more impressive, truly.
To actually go all the way back to the factories that made the uniforms to have
Hugo Boss. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And people out in Radio Land, you're not seeing Amy as I'm seeing Amy, but she definitely is blonde. She has a brilliant look to herself. Not a feel.
Yes.
But one can definitely see that they had picked her out to say, this is the side that you will be on. And
so Don was a prisoner. I was an SS officer.
Yeah, I was actually a prisoner with the prisoner. With those
in the stripes.
Stripes.
In the stripes, yeah.
And at the end of the show, there's this huge chorus. The prisoners are all out, and it's really powerful. And we're just singing full voice. And at the end of the show, everybody is just silent for a few seconds before the claps and the bravos.
Right.
Yeah.
And the relief that you're actually seeing a play and not seeing the real thing. I want to mention that our producer, Hank Rubicek, is a docent at the Holocaust Museum here in Houston. He's had several family members who suffered through that time in Europe.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
I'm singing this Wednesday night at the Holocaust Museum in honor of Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
My heroine.
Yes, I know. Mine too. So her son is actually coming to accept an award in her honor. And I'm singing about five songs from an upcoming CD that I'm working on with a dear friend called Love Songs Through the Ages. And it is in her honor. So what perfect timing.
Exactly.
Is that open to the public?
No.
No.
Oh, okay.
It is not. It is a little soiree. So Maddie Cade, she is hosting it at one of the theaters there that's named after her and her husband. So
funny. Well, give them the best from So What's Your Story? And
I will. Thank you.
When I just was visiting family, I was visiting my son and my daughter-in-law. And when I got up for my first cup of coffee, she's saying, okay, here are the mugs. So they are Jewish. And so they practice the separation of meat from the dairy. And I was not raised Jewish, so I have to navigate this. So she's going through the dairy section and she picks out one mug and she says, oh no, here's the one for you. And it's a Ruth Bader Ginsburg mug.
Love it. Yeah. Love it.
All right. Well, we are at the middle of the hour and it's time for station identification. I don't want to miss telling all of you that this is Mary Edgerton and you are enjoying my guest storytellers, Donald and Amy Figg on So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1. Houston's Community Station, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 in Huntsville. Now, we all know that Texas is a home for storytellers. Our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, is a terrific place to learn about the art of telling. They meet virtually the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And that virtually has only been since the pandemic. So one day, maybe it will be in person again. The next story swap is December 28th, and the theme will be holiday tales. Visit their website at HoustonStorytellers.org for the Zoom link to the swaps and for information about upcoming events. And while you're there, you might consider becoming a member. It's a very inexpensive way to hear and tell stories and to connect with other human beings during the pandemic. Also, enjoy past. So what's your story programs? Every show since 2008 listed on the menu under radio program. Another way to crank up your storytelling skills is by joining the Texas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. Our friends at the Moth at Warehouse Live are back in full gear. That is, they are having live events the second Tuesday of the month. So the next one will be the second Tuesday in December, and you'll find both dazzling and moving narratives, and you will meet really nice people there. As for our team, you can find us at So What's Your Story on Facebook. Please visit us, and of course, please like us. You can suggest storytellers or themes on Facebook. You can give us some feedback. You can also email us at SWYS, the initials of So What's Your Story, at kpft.org. Now, we've just been hearing this story about a very moving and memorable opera, The Passenger. It premiered in the U.S. in 2014 in a Houston Grand Opera performance, and Don and Amy Figg were both members of the chorus for that performance. How was The Passenger received? You say you took it from here to New York. So how was it received?
You know what? We received a lot of publicity. Certainly had a lot of sellout shows. And the fact that it was commissioned to New York, where we had three additional sellout performances, I think it was received very well. We were very proud of it, and I think our audience was too.
And everything that goes to New York, that's huge.
Oh, yes.
It was huge. And from there, The Passenger went to Chicago. It went to many opera houses after that.
Oh, wonderful.
Very interested in doing the production.
Now, both of you began and I guess have really spent your careers with the Houston Grand Opera, which is a great opera. What was it like performing in New York? I mean,
a dream come true.
Kind of, you know, center of opera.
A dream come true.
I never would have. I could put that in my resume. Performed in New York.
Yeah.
At the Park Armory, which is a historical building. And it was just the neatest place to do a show.
So for us as members of the Houston Grand Opera, we really have the best of both worlds where we perform locally. So we have a family life. Okay, so we both work full time. I'm in commercial real estate. Don is a Spanish teacher. And we do opera in addition to our everyday careers. Okay, so it's supplemental. It's what we do for fun. And we're able to do that because we don't travel. Mm-hmm. Occasionally we'll be asked to travel. This is one time that I think we've traveled with the opera since I've been a part of the Houston Grand Opera for over 21 years now. So it was extraordinary. It was a blessing. It was unique. And it was a gift to get to go to New York. Not everyone has that opportunity, especially if they're not even from New York or sing with the Met. So to be in Houston and get to go to New York, that's the cream of the crop
for a music festival.
Yeah.
Was there an image or a story that stayed with you from that trip to New York?
A story that stayed with us?
Well, we bicycled around Central Park, definitely shopped, took her shopping.
We just had a lot of fun.
You went to see Les Mis with your friend.
Oh, yeah. I saw Les Mis on Broadway. You know, just enjoyed. We took a bite out of New York. I mean, it was our friends couldn't believe how much we were able to do each day and then show up for performances. We said, we're not going to lay around at the pool. We are here to enjoy New York. And we did. So yeah. it was great. It was great.
Great New York foods. You know, every street corner's got 5, 6, 7 restaurants, all with wonderful food.
And again, all the street food.
Husband, to get to go together. I mean, we share these memories. We have over 20 years of memories together with the opera. The opera has been a blessing to our family. I mean, it's provided additional income that's paid for our wedding. It's kept me at home.
Our traveling. We like to go places.
Yeah.
So all our trips.
So I was able to be a stay-at-home mom for 9 years because of my contracts with the opera. I didn't have to work during the day. And, you know, he and I would manage our schedules and the contracts together. So there would always be a parent at home with our kids. So the opera has allowed me to be a better mom to my boys. So there's just a lot of gifts and blessings that this opportunity has allotted for us.
And my lessons paid off.
Yeah.
Your lessons paid off. Pay off. Okay. So we've talked about really a memorable experience in the production and a memorable experience in taking it to New York. What about memorable performers that you've worked with?
Well, one of the big memorable performers that I've performed on stage with is the absolutely great American bass, Samuel Raimi. Mm-hmm. And this man, his voice, his presence is just absolute greatness. You know, he's just, what an instrument he had and what presence. Just great presence on stage. And what an approachable, friendly man, too. Mm-hmm. And I've got to be in 6 different opera productions with him. From Mephistopheles, Faust, Boris Godunov, Nabucco, Don Carlo. Right. Just so many of them. And it's just, every time I'm like, wow, I'm on stage with Samuel Raimi. He's one of the opera greats, Mary, one of the absolute legendary opera greats.
So one of my favorites is Simon O'Neill, and he is a leading Wagnerian tenor. Don and I were both on stage with him for Wagner's Lohengrin. And truly to be able to sit on stage and be right next to this man as he's singing his aria, it just makes you want to weep because truly we have the best seats in the house. Oh, I mean, we're on stage listening to these greats sing and we're singing with them. And behind his back, he's giving the chorus a thumbs up. Yeah. and just so personable and kind, just an amazing tenor and talent. He's one. I did Samson and Delilah with Denise Graves. And I got to talk with her about her time on The Muppet Show or on Sesame Street. And, you know, it's just these fun conversations with these amazing talents and voices of the ages. Certainly Renee Fleming would be another one. And then Joyce DiDonato is another fantastic female vocalist of our day. And she is so friendly and kind. So all of those just highlight and put the cherry on the cake of what Don and I get to do in the chorus.
And we got to actually be on stage with a lot of the greats in one night when we did the opera gala, the 50th anniversary of UCLA.
Oh, tell me about that.
April 30th, 2005. We sang on stage with Elton John. Yeah, it's like, wow, that was an amazing experience. Yeah. And then, you know, Roger Moore was the MC. So he was backstage and Amy and I went met with him. And What a gracious, kind man. And then Amy needs to tell about her experience with Roger Moore.
Right. So Roger Moore was sitting backstage about to go on and introduce a number. And I said, this is my moment. I've got to go up to him. He's my favorite James Bond. And I went up to him and I said, oh, excuse me, Mr. Moore. And he was so gracious. He stood up and took my hand and he kissed my hand. And I said, I just want you to know, you have always been my favorite James Bond. And he said, oh, you have impeccable taste, young lady. And I said, oh, would you please allow me to come backstage during the intermission and get a picture with you? And he said, oh, yes, for certain. So I actually had to walk through Elton John's dressing room, which was the entire colon stage, and get permission. I told Roger Moore's people, I said, this is Amy. He's invited me to come back and get a picture. And they escorted me back to his dressing room where I got a few sweet moments with him and told him, I said, if you ever do another James Bond, I want to be your next Bond girl.
Oh, yes. Amy, I can see you as a Bond girl. I can.
And he said, well, I'm not doing that anymore, but thank you. And I said, thank you. Yeah. And I've got this great shot, you know, of the two of us together in his dressing room. So that was pretty cool. But Elton John was actually invited by Lynn Wyatt. And we sang backup to his number, Your Song. So that was really an amazing
Elton John with Elton John. Yes, opera chorus. I would love to hear that.
It was surreal.
Yeah. So we have a recording of the actual gala, but that was extracted from it. Oh. So for publication reasons, or I don't know why, but we do have a picture of the Houston Chronicle did a spread, and all of us are lined up on the stage and Elton John is right there in the center. So there is a picture, but they didn't allow him to be a part of the recording, or he didn't allow it.
Right.
There is contractual stuff. You know how that
property is. Thing. So I have to say, I haven't been to many galas, but you know, as a little girl not a little girl anymore, but having grown up in a small town in South Texas where the prom was about as big as it got. When is the next gala?
Be the 75th anniversary, which I need to do my math. If 2005 was the 25th, we should be coming up.
The 50th, you mean?
Yeah, it was the 50th. So the 75th would be, what is that?
2030.
2030?
I think 25 plus 5 is 30. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Whoop-de-doo. I'm saving my money now.
Yeah. So we were a part of the 50th, and it'd be great if we were still around for the 75th. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see about that. Yes.
So just another amazing memory, but we'll see.
So many memories. I think, I mean, so many colorful memories. You mentioned earlier, Don, you mentioned the color of a voice. And it reminds me of a book I read. And the evil woman in the book is referred to as a coloratura,
right,
as a singer who will drive every, what Carmen used to be thought of as an evil woman singer who will take advantage of everybody. Mm. And I've used the word throughout my life of like, person is a coloratura. But opera is so much larger than life. So what's going to be happening with the Houston Grand Opera this season?
It's a huge season. Well, Amy will start rehearsals of a French opera, The Dialogue of the Carmelites, which is a true story about these nuns that were martyred at the French Revolution. Mm-hmm. And then while she's doing that, I'll be doing Mozart's The Magic Flute, which is a really great production. Got to come see that one. And then we're going to do Romeo and Juliet together.
In the
spring. Back to back with Turandot, Puccini's last opera, which is the opera of operas. You know, 100 people are on stage singing full voice.
It is grand opera.
A grand opera. And Turandot is it's this dramatic soprano. You have to have a huge voice to sing it. And it's just the presence of Turandot. And it's going to be really exciting to end the season with Turandot.
It's been almost 20 years since the Houston Grand Opera has done Turandot. We have been waiting every year for this opera to be performed again on stage. So we are thrilled to get to be doing it together this next spring.
And what's great is this would be my third time to do Turandot.
Oh, so what is the story of Turandot?
Turandot takes place in Beijing, China. And she's a princess. They call her the Ice Princess. And she is angry at men because her ancestors were, the women were pillaged by like Mongolians that came in and raped and pillaged. And she hates men. But men, princes from all over the world come to ask her hand in marriage. But what she does is she says, okay, well, you got three riddles to get. If you get the three riddles, you'll have my heart. So the opera starts out with this prince and he doesn't get the riddles and he gets beheaded on the spot.
Oh.
So if they don't get the riddles, they get beheaded. Well, this hotshot tenor, Khalaf, which takes a huge tenor voice, one of the big voices, okay? And he comes in and challenges her, says, you know what? I'm going to get these riddles. So there's this big scene and the chorus is on stage. The Turandot's on stage. The tenor, Khalaf, is on stage. Best seat in the house, once again, because we're watching their conversation back and forth. He gets the riddles, all three of them, and she freaks out. She begs the emperor, please don't let this happen. Don't let this happen. And so Khalaf, the tenor, says, you know what? If you guess my name, I will get beheaded. Guess my name. So she says, no one in Beijing, which is Peking back then, no one in Beijing sleeps. That's where the tenor sings Nessun Dorma, means nobody sleeps. And so the whole night, no one sleeps because they are after his name. And the three ministers of Turandot are just trying to bribe him. We'll give you gold. We'll give you women, whatever you want. What is your name? So basically, the name is never found out. But Turandot at the end has some kind of revelation. And it's beautiful because usually opera ends in death. This opera does not end in death. It ends in joy. And she goes, at the end, at the very end, she goes, I know the name of this man. This man's name is love.
Oh, how beautiful.
So he conquers Turandot's ice heart.
Oh, beautiful.
And the music is glorious.
Yes.
Glorious music. Glorious music.
I can't wait. You know, I have season tickets this year. And I can't wait then. Just sounds wonderful.
It is.
I have a few questions as we're coming to an end. If you had your life to do over again, would you still be vocalists, choristers?
Yes, I don't think I would choose another path. I mean, I get the best of both worlds. I have an amazing husband that I get to come home to every night. I'm not living in a hotel room performing all around the world, but this man takes me all around the world on our travels, and we get to come home and perform together here at the Houston Grand Opera. So I love being a singer. So it's just one of the many facets of things that I enjoy doing. So what about you?
Oh, it's just that artistic fix.
Yes.
You know, I get to go and learn this complicated, difficult music. And once we learn it, we get to put on these lavish costumes. Some of them are simple. Some of them are intense and wild. And and we get to be on stage with these great singers
and together.
It's a lot of work, but it's something I've been extremely proud of.
And I love it.
I have to pinch myself like, wow, I've been doing this for so many years.
And again, after 18 months of not being on stage, I enjoy it and appreciate it even more.
And I wasn't sure if I was going to re-audition again, because after 18 months of pandemic, I just wasn't sure if I was going to be able to pull it off. And I was like, oh, I've been doing it for so long and the pandemic and, you know, the low woes and lamentations. And Amy was like, please, please re-audition. I don't want to do this without you. And I did it. I knocked it out of the park. Amy knocked it out of the park. And we got all these contracts and we're back.
All right. Well, I was just going to ask you, so you mentioned you thought of stopping. How did the Houston Grand Opera maintain its presence, maintain its working members, not just those of us who would attend during COVID and the shutdowns?
Well, everyone was required to be fully vaccinated. And as we rehearsed, we all had to wear masks during every music rehearsal. So we only were able to take off the mask at the final orchestra dress rehearsal.
Wow.
That was strange.
That has to be hard because you have to project that voice.
Right. So they do have masks that are made for singers, which keeps them out further. Mm-hmm. But still, it's, you know, that was very frustrating. And I know it's frustrating for Richard Beto, too, because he can't see our mouths. And he could not confirm if we were fully memorized.
Because he reads lips. He can tell who's got it memorized.
Right.
And, you know, we're paid singers. And our job is to have that piece memorized before we go into staging.
Yeah. And we also had to have regular COVID tests too. Wow. And at the beginning, we had to go to a CVS or somewhere to actually have a test, but then they actually invested in having kits provided for the chorus.
Oh, nice.
When we showed up for rehearsals or for performances, we would be notified in advance if that night was a testing night. And we went and tested. I mean, we have poked our nose probably at least 30 times through Carmen. And then we would receive the results via email, and those results would be sent to the company where they had a record. So praise God, we were able to get through Carmen. Don and I both were negative throughout the entire show. And we just took extra precautions, as I think we all did. None of us wanted to risk infecting each other or having the show not go to full fruition on the stage.
They were not going to let anything slip through the cracks, because one person sick could get three or four or five, and that would really ruin the show.
Show must go on.
The show must go on.
Yes.
Right. That's great. I actually work at MD Anderson Cancer Center, and because we're a state institution, mm-hmm. through the summer, we could not enforce a vaccination rule. But now that the federal government has tied reimbursement to it, it's there. But I have to say, I luckily was able to get my vaccine early because I'm a practicing physician. And I cried. It just felt as though the nightmare was beginning to lift. I could see my children.
The wave came again.
Yes, and another one now. Yes.
Another one. Well, I'm getting my booster on Friday. So
for you.
I'm just going to get it done with.
I think all of us, Mary, have the mentality of whatever it takes. We are getting paid. And if we have to wear this mask, then we have to wear the mask. But we're getting paid. We're singing. We're performing. And we knew that once we got on stage, we were going to take the mask off. Hopefully, you know, in the coming contracts, we won't have to take those extreme measures like we did for Carmen. But we were just thankful to be back, whatever it took.
Yes. Yes.
Well, with this new variant.
We're glad you're back. We're glad
you're back. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know where the world's going to go, but what do they say? The world's a stage.
That's right.
Well, Thank you, Don and Amy, for taking us on this very memorable trip of your memories with the Houston Grand Opera. And that was very exciting.
Thank you.
And as I bring us all back to our normal everyday world, Larry Thompson will be at the helm next week with more tellers and new journeys. So don't move that dial now, because Charles Hightower's R&B Gold is up next with a cool mix of soul. Join Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of your everyday. And every day while you're driving home or just chilling, listen to it, because on Thursdays at 5 p.m., you'll be listening to us. So what's your story? So keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. Again, Don and Amy, thank you. And how about a favorite piece of music, something special for us to close with?
Well, how about in honor of Turandot, a little bit of Nessun Dorma, which everyone knows. I don't know the words, but everyone is familiar with the tune. Da 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 la 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 la.
So beautiful. I can't wait for it. And Turandot had a wonderful ending. So I just want to let everybody know, if a story's not ending the way you want, just hold back and think about it, because it's never too late.
This is Quantum Leap Radio. I am the Grandfather Clock.
And I am your girl, Dope Courtney, a.k.a. Dopico Jones. And we are excited.
No.
Oh, wait. I said it, didn't I? I'm sorry. This is your girl, Dope A. Courtney, a.k.a. Dopico Jones.
I want to tell the people that we are now in their ear on a Saturday.
Our new time is 9 a.m. to 11 a.m.
That's right, where they can get the hip-hop of the past, present, and possibly future.
You want to find us on the HD2 channel at 9 a.m.
KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, HD.2, or worldwide at kpft.org/listen under the HD2 link, or you can actually find us on the Pacifica Radio app. This is Houston's community station. We are Quantum Leap Radio.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
This is not a test.
Tune into the Dead Time Radio Show for 3 hours of punk, hardcore, industrial, death rock, noise rock, experimental, grindcore, and other forms of non-corporate underground music. Every Thursday night, Friday morning at 2 a.m. on KPFT.